We have Tanya from Our Next Life here today to talk about her after-tax saving strategy and why it's prudent to have one on the early retirement journey, as well as her two-phase retirement. We're going to talk a little bit about her book as well, and we're so excited to invite her on for a round two of her amazing story. Let's hear from Tanya.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Jay and I are super excited to welcome back Tanya to the podcast. If you think that name sounds familiar, that's because she has been on once before. And that was as part of her episode with Kara from the Fairer Sense podcast. So this time we are just having Tanya back herself. Welcome, Tanya.
Hello.
And of course, we've got Jay as well. What's up, Jay?
Hello.
Tanya, for those who are new to the podcast and maybe haven't gotten back to listen to your old episode, can you give everybody like a brief overview of who you are? Who is Tanya?
Hi, I'm Tanya Hester. I was born in the late 70s and no, just kidding. Although that's actually true. I write the early retirement blog, Our Next Life. I have a podcast called The Fairer Sense with Kara, as you mentioned. And I just this week have a new book out called Work Optional, Retire Early, The Non-Penny Pinching Way that I'm sure we'll talk about more today. But I retired a little over a year ago with my husband, Mark, when I was 38. He was 41. We had had, you know, what felt like long but weren't actually long careers in political consulting. I was a journalist for a little bit before that. We now live in Tahoe and try to be outdoors a little bit every day or a lot bit every day, but yeah, pretty much enjoying life.
So when we recorded with you, you, I think, had either just quit your job or you were just going to quit your job. So what has your first year of early retirement been like?
Oh, gosh. I will say first, the first year felt really long, which was a surprise because I think we've all had the experience as we get older of years feeling shorter and shorter and time starting to feel like it's flying. I feel really lucky that, yeah, last year, 2018 felt just super, super long in a really good way. We did so much stuff. We went to Taiwan. We went to Mexico. We went to France and Monaco. We went to a bunch of different places in the US. We were in New York a few times. And I also wrote a book. I also did a podcast season, kept the blog going. Mark was out mountain biking almost every day last summer. We've been out skiing a bunch this winter. I mean, there's just been a ton going on. And also I've had more time with family on both sides, my dad and Mark's family, which has been really, really wonderful.
So basically you two just sat around on the couch eating Doritos and watching daytime television, right?
Oh God, I wish I could eat Doritos. and we don't have daytime television. We have caught up on some shows. So like our last several years of work, we did not have time to watch TV pretty much at all. And everyone go like, oh, you should watch Stranger Things or whatever. And we're like, yeah, no time. So we did spend a good chunk of 2018 actually trying to like get slightly more current on pop culture. But yeah, that wasn't like an everyday thing or anything.
So Tanya, something that is unique about your early retirement strategy is that you and Mark broke down your accumulation phase and your ultimate retirement into two distinct buckets. And I think those of us listening, most of us are in the accumulation phase and we're trying to figure out what is the ideal way and where our money should go. How should we allocate our savings? So can you talk a little bit about your after-tax savings strategy and specifically what are the two phases of your retirement?
Yeah. So this was several years back while writing the blog. I kind of named our approach the two-phase retirement, which is thinking about early retirement and traditional retirement as essentially separate. There's a little bit of overlap because the period when you can start to access the tax-advantaged accounts like 401k and IRA without having to jump through any hoops starts earlier at 59 and a half than does your retirement healthcare. Medicare doesn't start until 65, at least currently. That could change. But we had kind of a head start on the 401k stuff. Mark especially was really, really good at saving early in his career and had a really generous company match. So he had a good amount saved there. I wasn't certainly as aggressive as young as he was, but I had a good chunk in my 401k too by the time we really got serious about early retirement. And we just kind of felt like we wanted to leave that money alone on some level. You know, we knew there were ways to get at it early. And I know your listeners are well acquainted with those strategies, which are fine if that suits your comfort level. But for us, we just thought, you know, there's so many unknowns out there. We have no idea what Medicare is going to look like. most people now who retire still dramatically underestimate what their healthcare expenses will be after Medicare. And, you know, we just don't know what the world is going to look like in 30 years or 25 years. And so why don't we leave ourselves a bit more cushion and leave that money alone to grow? And so we really did that. We kept maxing out our 401ks because we could afford to while we were saving in the last few years, but we focused the bulk of our effort on saving in taxable funds so that we wouldn't have to do any Roth conversion or, you know, any Rule 72T, you know, the substantially equal periodic payments, any of that stuff. We just straight up saved in Vanguard index funds that have no restrictions. That, along with paying off the house, were really, those were our two big goals in the last several years of saving and really where we funneled everything. So now we're in a position where we have a certain pool of funds that will last us until Mark turns 59 and a half, until we can tap 401ks. We have a little bit of a leaner existence now. I would certainly not call it lean fire. I really am actually opposed to those designations of lean and fat fire, but we're living, you know, like when we travel now, we're game to stay in not quite hostel, although I do still stay in hostels if I'm traveling solo, but we'll stay in, you know, like a lower end hotel and be very comfortable with that. But like when I don't know, when we're 65 or 70, we might want to stay in a nicer hotel or like occasionally have a splurge or just be able to do things a little more comfortably. So smaller budget now and then bigger budget in our traditional retirement years.
Do you regret saving so much in your 401k? So for example, I max out my 401k every year because I'm able to do so. But lately I'm wondering, would I rather have that money after tax in a brokerage account?
So I probably differ a lot from folks who are on the, you know, kind of as fast as possible path to FIRE philosophy. In my view, the risk that we all run is that we don't have enough money until way late in life, when it's way too late to do anything about it. Like, you're most likely to figure out that you undersaved when you're 75 or 80. And that is no time to be figuring that out, especially when we have a world where, like, we don't know what's going to be up with Social Security. There are just so many unknowns. So to me, I would rather have a big cushion. And the truth is, like, we could tap that anytime. But if you can save 25x, you know, 25 times your annual expenses, I think you can save 30 times your annual expenses. That might be a slightly controversial opinion, but I think it's better to oversave a little bit. I honestly do, just given all the unknowns out there. And like, Jay, I don't think you're going to come to regret that. I think you're going to be glad that you have looked out for future you, especially now when you can work hard and earn more, which won't necessarily be true later in life when you'll be so glad you have that money.
Yeah, that's really interesting because the bulk of my savings right now is in my 401k. And so that makes me a little concerned that it's all in one bucket. But that is my retirement right now, is that is like $130,000 is in there. Just based on that alone, I'm set for retirement. And now it's a matter of figuring out how fast do I want to retire and saving outside of that.
Obviously, you can decide for yourself whether you want to do the one phase, you know, the one pool of funds, thinking of 401k as early retirement funding or not. I honestly just think more people should consider the two-phase approach so that you give older you a bigger cushion and you can be comfortable later in life instead of stressing about money. So I think for you, Gwen, like, you have so much capacity to side hustle. Like, I think you could probably get to a point where you could semi-retire pretty quickly, because if all you have to do is cover your living expenses and you know your traditional retirement is set, that number is a lot smaller than what you'd need for a full early retirement. So, you know, those are just like good questions that you should be thinking about.
True. Next time I try that, because I did try it in 2018, next time I try that, I will have a lot more cash saved up because I definitely ran out before my side hustles could gain a lot of traction. So
yeah,
more cash is always good.
Gwen, I read a stat about that this morning. It said 38% of entrepreneurs are able to draw from the funds of the company that they're founding in the first year. So most people can't actually live off the money they make in that first year of entrepreneurship. So you're with the rest of society there.
Well, I don't know if that makes me feel better or not, but
that's why I call early retirement entrepreneurship for wimps. It's like, if you don't want the risk of it all, but you do want to start something on your own, you know, having that really big safety net saved up is a great thing.
It really, really is.
Tanya, what has your experience been with side hustles over your early retirement accumulation phase?
I side hustled for 10 years teaching yoga and then spinning and loved it. It was great. I mean, it was hugely time consuming. I lost a lot of sleep because I had to get up really early for 6 a.m. classes and then sometimes taught late into the evening, but it was great. I got paid to work out and, you know, I really got to bond with people and form long-term relationships. So it was super good. I also think if you're interested, teaching fitness is a great side hustle because it's pretty easy to get trained to do it. And then you start making money quickly. So it's not one of those things where you're out like thousands of dollars before you actually start turning a profit. You just have to spend a few $100 to get certified, do a little training, and then you can start making, you know, anywhere from $20 to $50 an hour or per class after you do that. So it's a great thing. But there came a point in my career because I was in, you know, a very serious career track career, political consulting, where I was expected to be able to say yes to things and to be able to travel on short notice. I got to a point where I was having to sub out a lot of classes when I was having to hop off calls earlier than I wanted to in the evening because I had to go teach a class. It just became really apparent that continuing the side hustle was holding back my main career. I sort of had to look at it of like, okay, how much am I earning at the side hustle? How much would I potentially earn if I could get to the next level in my main job? And I decided actually to quit the side hustle. And that turns out to have been one of the best career decisions I ever made. And then within that year of quitting, I got promoted, I got a decent raise, I got a bigger bonus. It all worked out. And then, you know, I could be totally at work and clients' disposal, which I was willing to do because I knew that I wasn't going to be in this career forever. I'm a big believer that if you know you're going to retire early, you know you're going to have a shorter career than most people, that rather than pull back and sort of do the like typical, oh, I'm just not going to invest myself because I know I'm not going to be here forever. I think you should actually do the opposite. Invest yourself totally. This is a short portion of your life. Why not try to accomplish as much as you can, do as much that you can be proud of later, and know that you gave it your all. And then when you leave, you can move on to the next thing and give the next thing your all. But to me, that was, you know, and to Mark too, that was really our approach of leaning in hard and getting rid of the side hustle turned out to be an important part of that.
Yeah. So I was always on like the side hustle track. The side hustles will eventually earn more than your main hustle and then you can quit and focus full time and grow it and be really great. Actually trying out being an entrepreneur showed me that maybe it's better to actually focus on growing my income through the corporate world, because I earned like something piddly, like just over $2,000 in my entire like 8 months worth of entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. I went back to work and got that in my first paycheck in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So clearly the world says my time is more valuable at the corporate world. So I should focus on that, which I am doubling down and looking for ways to actively grow my income at work. Mm-hmm. So right now where I'm working at is kind of average in pay, but the world has shown me lately that I am actually worth a lot more than that and that I have work that is valued. So I might be able to almost triple my income just by working at a corporation.
Yeah. And I think the key is just to know your own circumstances. Like we all know blogger friends who are teachers, for example. And with teachers, your earnings potential, it's very capped because our society undervalues teachers. And if you love teaching and you want to stay with that, probably working on growing a side hustle is your greatest potential for earning more. But yeah, for you, Gwen, or for people who are in the corporate world, it's worth looking at what are you potentially trading by focusing on a side hustle or not. At my peak, I was probably earning $10,000 a year extra with yoga and spinning. I was teaching a ton. I was teaching 6 to 8 classes a week. So like it was a lot. But that $10,000 a year was not nothing by any means. It helped me pay off debt. It helped us save for our first place in LA. But once you reach a certain level in the corporate world, like getting that much more in your earnings is not that big a deal. So it's always good to keep your eyes open and to think about also like when you were trying to be an entrepreneur, whereas I was working for companies who were established and I was just getting paid per class. So like I didn't have that same kind of risk that an entrepreneur takes on. So it's also sort of looking at those questions. But then, yeah, otherwise it's just sort of looking at your own situation.
I was listening to the latest Choose FI episode with Nasima, who's a nurse in California, and she was saying how she didn't go this path, but you could get a 2 years associate's degree and potentially make $200,000 in California as a nurse, which sounds like a great mid-career switch as well. So if someone doesn't have the potential to make more in their day job right now, being willing to be open to a new career path that could make more could work for them.
100%. And Robert and Robin Charlton, who I feature in the book Work Optional, and who also wrote their own self-published book that's on Amazon, How to Retire Early, which is a great guide, especially for folks earning under six figures and a couple. You get to see all their numbers and how they retired early. It's really helpful. But Robin did exactly that. She was a travel agent. She retrained to be a nurse and really accelerated their FI timeline that way. So yeah, it's a great potential option. She actually was able to do a one-year program, not a two-year program, but it was a full-time. What you couldn't do that on top of working. I think the two-year programs you could do like nights and weekends kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a total risk, but might be worth it. So I think there's the income side of the equation and then the savings side of the equation, and both are very important to getting to early retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now let's talk about the book. I was very lucky to receive an advanced copy and sped through the entire thing. Actually, you gave it to me in person over the Christmas break. And by the time I got back from the trip, I had already read the entire thing. It's awesome. And my favorite part about it is that while it's extremely approachable to new people, it's also super like math and strategy based in an approachable way so that people who are already very familiar with FIRE can still learn from it and learn from what you and Mark have done. So kudos to you for balancing both of those.
Thank you so much.
And on the other side, I'm still waiting for my copy to get here.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. It makes me really bummed because all of my friends are reading it and saying how good it is and I can't read it yet.
Soon.
So who is this book for?
I've always dreamed of writing a book, but I will not say that I had always dreamed of writing a personal finance book. This was a cool opportunity that came along, but I felt really strongly that I had no interest in writing it if I couldn't do a couple of things. So one, to your question, is I wanted to be able to write a book that would be non-intimidating for people who are new to the concept of early retirement or financial independence, and including wanting to be more inclusive about it, of talking about semi-retirement a lot more, talking about what I call career intermission, being able to take a break from work for a while so that people who maybe don't earn enough to do full early retirement still have options. That was super important to me. But I also wanted to be able to add to the discussion among folks who really geek out on this stuff and who know a ton about, for example, safe withdrawal rates, or who really focus on, you know, what is the right approach? Is it the one phase or the two phase approach? So we do talk a lot about math in the book, but in an approachable way. But the thing that I wanted to do that felt different to me and that also just felt true to who I am and what I write about on my blog is the life part of it, that this isn't fundamentally a mathematics exercise. You know, we are talking about our whole lives. We're all here talking about something so fundamentally huge and life-changing and rare, you know, something that so few people in the course of history have ever gotten to ponder, that I wanted to make sure that the life part of it was really what was motivating people as you work through kind of the process that I lay out in the book, that you're thinking about, okay, what do I want my legacy to be? What do I want to be able to look back at the end of my life and say I did? What do I want my day-to-day life to look like? Who else is a part of this plan? And to really center the discussion on that so that all the financial decisions come from that place instead of vice versa, instead of sort of saying like, oh, well, I heard somebody on the internet lives on $40,000 a year and saved $1 million. So those must be the right numbers. Well, no, let's actually look at your life and your circumstances and how fast you can save and what your different options are. And so I feel really proud of what's in there because I think I accomplished all that stuff.
Yeah, that's something that I noticed as well in my time off of work last year is that I didn't have a clear purpose and what I wanted to do with my time. And so I just ended up wasting a ton of it.
Oh, and I get notes like that all the time of people who said, I prepared financially for early retirement and then I quit and then I was bored and aimless and I went back to work. Seriously, over the course of the 4 years I've been blogging, I've probably gotten 100 separate notes like that. That's a real thing. And Gwen, you experienced it yourself, like not thinking about life in a bigger sense of not just like, oh, I can't wait until I don't have to set an alarm clock, or oh, I can't wait until like I'm not checking my email every second. Those are good. You know, those are certainly motivators for a lot of us. But thinking about, okay, well, what will actually fill that time? How will you feel like you have worth in the world? Because even those of us who feel very frustrated at work, or people who maybe would even say they hate work, which I certainly never said, but for folks who are in that place, it's easy to focus on that instead of thinking like, okay, well, what do I actually get out of work in terms of self-worth or value or feeling of contributing? And how will I feel when that's gone? Because we all have that need to feel like we're contributing in some way to the world, or like we matter to the world. Sometimes those are hard questions to answer outside of the work framework. So it's just important to think that stuff through. And the really good thing is that by thinking that through, you give yourself a ton more financial motivation. I really do think it's easier to save, easier to make some of these choices when you know exactly what you're aiming for and exactly what your goal is in a big picture sense, not just on the spreadsheet.
So do you have any big events coming up in promoting this book?
Not exactly. For folks who aren't familiar with publishing, it's changing so rapidly with everything going online and a lot of the bookstores closing down. So pretty much you only do a book tour if you're like already a celebrity or if you're financing it yourself, which I don't know. I still want to feel early retired. So like, I don't really want to go on like a big book tour and feel like I'm hustling and grinding every day. But I will be doing some different events through the course of the year. So I'll be at Camp Fi Mid-Atlantic over Memorial Day. I've got a reader meetup coming up in late March in Portland when I'll be there for the AWP conference. I'm going to FinCon, of course, in DC just after Labor Day. I'll be at the Ecuador Chautauqua in November. And then I'll have a couple of different Sense Positive Women in FI events coming up probably this fall, but those are not scheduled yet. So stay tuned.
So we have a special surprise. We're giving away a copy of the book to anyone who leaves Fire Drill Podcast a review and emails us with a screenshot by the end of the month. So thank you, Tanya, for the copy, and good luck to everyone. We hope that you win.
I'm super excited that we could give away a copy to one of your listeners. It's been a really fun project to work on, and it's a really cool thing to be able to put something out into the world that you're really proud of with your own name on it, which I know for many of us at work, we work on stuff that ultimately our own name doesn't go on. So something I encourage everybody to think about is not necessarily publishing a book, but thinking about like, is there some creative project I can do or something I can do where I can really own it and have my name on it in early retirement? It's a really nice, fulfilling thing.
Plus, it's super cool to go into like Barnes and Noble or someplace and look at the bookshelf and go, I know these people.
Yeah, the book's just out this week, so I haven't had that experience with myself yet, but I love seeing friends' books in bookstores, so I totally know what you're talking about.
We will definitely link to your book in the show notes and your blog, and Tanya, thanks so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure.
This was so fun. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion, and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So, in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the Reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.
So let's talk a little bit about side hustles. Tanya, what has your... My dog's tail literally muted the mic. Okay.